A Polar Voices Perspective with Ken Tape.
My name is Ken Tape. I'm a research assistant professor. I'm at the University of Alaska Fairbanks Institute of Northern Engineering, and I'm in a branch of the Institute of Northern Engineering called the Water and Environmental Research Center. We were on the Colville River, and we were stuck for about 36 hours with a really strong headwind. We were in a raft, and so we couldn't go downstream, so we waited and waited for the wind to die down to the point that we could resume our work and get down to our next sampling location. And at about midnight, finally the wind let down enough and we managed to get around the corner and started floating down the river. About 2:30 a.m. we started floating by this massive ice exposure, and it was a little bit back from the river, so it wasn't right at the water's edge. They think this was a yedema, which is a really old type of Pleistocene permafrost. So it's permafrost over 10,000 years old that developed in a certain way. Anyway, there's not a lot of it in northern Alaska, but it's a giant solid ice bluff. And when I say giant, it's probably, you know, 6, 7, 8 meters tall. It's a vertical face of frozen soil, but mostly ice, a really ice-rich soil. And of course, everything that's melting out of it are species that were present, you know, over 10,000 years ago. And so it's kind of interesting to see there's a whole bunch of mud and at the bottom of this thing, right? A bunch of mud that's kind of slowly eroding its way down to the river. And that mud in it is growing, you know, the seeds of things that were around 10 or 12,000 years ago. So we had a guy on our trip named Ben Gagliotti, who is a grad student at University of Alaska, and he's really knowledgeable about ancient grasses and, you know, the Pleistocene landscape. And he, you know, was really excited to take some samples and check the thing out. I mean, we were all pretty excited. It's not something you see every day. So we spent, you know, a couple hours. Ben took some samples. After a while, we got back in the boat and continued downriver to our next established sampling point. You get away from roads in the Arctic, and it's like going back in time. You know, you get away from roads, and the Arctic has been the same, or nearly so, for a long time. And I really enjoy wilderness. I really enjoy being in the wilderness, and I did it a lot up until recently. And I think that really is at the bottom of my connection to the place. This issue of timelessness and how things change over time, I find fascinating, but it doesn't, you know, even if nothing was changing, I'd still be very interested in how the place works and what it'll be like in the future. The permafrost and the vegetation are linked inextricably. So one changes, so does the other. And sort of the open tundra, you're looking at, you know, a variety of what we would call a prostrate shrub tundra, a low shrub tundra, and a lot of sedges and grasses, and not a lot of bare ground. So, and that kind of, if you go out towards the coast, you know, you get more bare ground and frost boils and things like that, where the vegetation is actually sporadic, or on recent glacial moraines, you'll still have gravels exposed here and there. But in most places, you know, the vegetation is pretty dense, although it's not very high. It's pretty dense and it covers the ground, so there's not a lot of exposed soil. You know, when we look at the vegetation changes in the Arctic, one way or another, they're manifesting changes in permafrost as well, because of that linkage between that sort of insulating properties that vegetation has, whether it's drifting snow or just providing a thicker organic layer to insulate the ground below it and change the permafrost. So anytime you see changes in vegetation, you have a good reason to believe that there are changes in permafrost happening at the exact same time. But we get into a chicken or the egg argument of, well, is it that permafrost changed a little bit due to warming and then the vegetation changes occurred? Or did the vegetation change really occur first and that induced changes in permafrost? And I think probably both of those are happening, permafrost first changing or vegetation changing first. The conditions that are needed, you know, for permafrost to exist in the Arctic, it's a short summer, but you know, you still got 4 to 5 months of 4 months at least of above 0 degrees C, above freezing daily temperatures. It's warm in the Arctic, so the question is, how do you get frozen ground, you know, a half meter, a couple feet down? And the way you get that is by having, first of all, you know, enough moisture in the soil. And to have enough moisture in the soil, you have to have a relatively fine-grained soil. So if you have sand, you know, the water just drains down and is not held within the soil at all. But if you have silt or a clay silt, which is what a lot of the Arctic landscape is, at least in northern Alaska and elsewhere as well, then those fine-grained soils hold water and everything's frozen at the end of the winter. And if you have enough insulation, that's what you ultimately need. If you want to have permafrost, you've got to have either a short enough growing season, or in the case of northern Alaska, you have to have vegetation that is insulating the soils below. And that vegetation can be an organic layer that's a foot thick or less. You can have, you know, all the vegetation that's above ground as well. So when I say organic layer, I'm really talking about organic soils. But it's plant material that hasn't decomposed. So, you know, there's litter falls off of the shrubs, grasses, you know, when they senesce at the end of the season. If there's not enough decomposition going on in the soil, then that stuff hangs around and becomes insulation. So that when the temperature hits 75 in the summer, that temperature isn't really reaching that far down into the soils because that vegetation layer is there. So you can see that as you change that vegetation layer, whether it's adding shrubs or removing shrubs or thickening that organic layer or burning it off with a fire, all those things are going to directly affect how much frozen ground, how deep the frozen ground is below there, and sort of what its thermal properties are.
This has been a Polar Voices Perspective with Ken Tape of the Water and Environmental Research Center at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. You can find full episodes of Polar Voices and other featured perspectives at thepolarhub.org. Podcasts of episodes are also available through iTunes.